Future Pulse, Patients First, investigating innovative cardiovascular research with a patient-oriented clinical outcome focus. I'm Dr. Thomas Nero, clinical and interventional cardiologist and director of cardiovascular research at CAFC. Hello, I'm Dr. Thomas Nero, and welcome to Future Pulse. Today, we're going to be talking a little bit about statistics. And I know that when people think about health and medicine, it is usually not to thinking about statistics. Actually, statistics is usually the last thing that people want to think about. But it is an important idea to have a basic concept of how physicians come to making the diagnosis and the recommendations that they do. In the end, it all comes down to statistics. What's the most likely diagnosis? What is the best treatment option? And how are we going to compare those options? We're going to try to tackle three aspects today: how we test for a diagnosis, treatment effectiveness, otherwise known as risk reduction, and finally, a bit about how research is conducted and analyzed. When we're trying to make a diagnosis, we take a patient's symptoms and we put together some ideas about what could be causing the problem. But often, we'll perform a test to help us confirm this diagnosis. What we know about the patient and the likelihood of a disease, we'll call this the pre-test probability. The test should help to either increase or decrease that probability. This idea is called Bayesian analysis, but essentially it helps us to trust a diagnosis or let us know if we have to look in a different direction. With any test, there's a chance that the test will produce the correct outcome or a true positive result, or, if the test is normal, a true negative result. But since no test is perfect, there's a chance that the test provides a wrong result, what we'll refer to as a false positive, or, if the test shows that there's no problem when there really is one, a false negative. We refer to these aspects of the test as the sensitivity and specificity, but it's not important to memorize these terms. But the important take-home message is that if the chance or pretest probability of a disease is really low to start with, well, then you better have a really, really accurate test. Otherwise, your chances of having a disease, even if the test is abnormal, is still really low. And if the test isn't that accurate, then an abnormal result may not really indicate disease, as you may have gotten a false positive result. A good example is performing a treadmill stress test in a young woman with chest pain. In this group, far less than 1% of people will have a coronary blockage. This 1% is what we would call the pretest probability. Since the treadmill stress test is correct only about 75% of the time, and the pretest probability is so low, an abnormal test would be 10 times more likely to be wrong or a false positive than it would be to be correct, a true positive. Unfortunately, we're unable to distinguish between a false positive and true positive without further testing. If a test result is positive or abnormal, I will let the patient know not to worry, as this is a good way to screen out patients for potential disease, and we usually go on to more testing if needed. If the test is normal, then the chance of having a coronary blockage becomes extremely, extremely low, and we can go on and worry about other things. It's important that you discuss this with your doctor to essentially know how good is the test, and what is this test really telling us. In other podcasts, we'll talk about specific tests and try to answer these questions. The second issue is about therapy and how good treatment is. For this, physicians will talk about risk reduction. Essentially, how much will this prescription decrease the chance of getting ill or improve the chance of recovery? We discussed this a bit in an earlier podcast, but I wanted to go into it a little bit more detail here. There are two ways we discuss risk reduction: relative risk reduction and absolute risk reduction. Relative risk reduction is the decrease from baseline relative to the baseline. If your chance of having a stroke is 10% baseline over a lifetime, and a pill decreases your risk to 8%, that's a 20% relative risk reduction, which seems like a large amount, and we may choose to use that therapy. But realize, it won't reduce your chance of having a stroke to zero. Even with the pill, there is still an 8% chance of having a stroke, which is 20% less than a 10% chance, but it's not zero. Often, it's easier for people to understand risk and risk reduction if they are presented with absolute risk. In the example that we discussed, if 10 people out of 100 would have had a stroke without the pill, and 8 people would have had a stroke with the pill, only 2 people really got the benefit, which is an absolute risk reduction of 2%, 2 out of 100. I realize this is a bit tricky. Unfortunately, what is important is that it's difficult, if not impossible, to know which two patients out of the 100 will get the benefit ahead of time. And at the end, you don't know which 90 didn't get any benefit at all. In statistical lingo, we'll refer to this as number needed to treat. And this is usually simplified down so we know how many patients need to be treated to prevent one event. In the example above, how we prevent one stroke. Just to give some insight, a number needed to treat of 20 is a really great therapy. And in the stroke pill example, 50 people needed to be treated to prevent one event, which isn't too bad in most circumstances. Finally, let's talk a little bit about research studies. When you do a research study, there's a chance that what you want to prove is right, and there is a chance that what you want to prove is wrong. If you plan the experiment correctly, you'll be more likely to prove the theory or hypothesis if you are correct to begin with. Unfortunately, no experiment is perfect, and we build into our experiments a bit of statistical analysis to let us know if we're on the right track. We'll call this a p-value, and once again, don't worry about the term. But when we say that our research has a true outcome, we make a cut of a 1 in 20 chance that we're wrong. This means that there is a 95% chance that our results are correct and supports our hypothesis, and there's a 5% chance that our results are due to chance alone. Sometimes our studies are really good, and we're really very confident, and perhaps there's only a 1 in 100 chance that we're wrong. But sometimes due to chance alone, we miss the boat, and we feel that we only have a 1 in 18 chance. Most research won't accept this outcome, even if it's more likely, and more studies will need to be performed to prove or disprove the hypothesis. And then sometimes we just throw the idea out and we'll move on. I realize that this is a lot of information, and people will spend lifetimes studying statistics, but it's important to understand the basics of testing and how good the test is at helping to confirm a diagnosis. It's important to understand risk reduction so you can decide if a treatment is right for you. And finally, if you want to learn more about a diagnosis or treatment, a little bit about research statistics so that you can have a better idea of how convinced we are that the studies we performed are right. Thanks for joining us today. If you want to take a deeper dive into some of these ideas, please check out Future Pulse Cardiology Research Podcast. And please let us know if you have any questions or ideas about the podcast. Have a great day.